If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Pride is many things: celebration, visibility, love. But it's also resistance. It began as a protest led by queer and trans people who demanded to be seen, safe, and free. And while we celebrate today, that original spirit feels more urgent than ever. Across the world, queer and trans communities are facing renewed backlash. Our rights questioned, our bodies debated, our joy politicized. And yet, joy persists. In today's episode, I'm joined by someone who embodies that very dynamic and that resilience. Joining me and making a return to the Mission Critical podcast is Jonathan Van Ness, a voice many know for their humor, beauty, and boldness. Over the past year, Jonathan has navigated intense public attention, scrutiny, and personal transformation. But what's equally true is that it was also a year of tremendous support and success. Their podcast, Getting Better, grew, their book became a New York Times bestseller, and Queer Eye continues to thrive. Despite the challenges that 2024 brought, they chose to reawaken. To return to joy, not as escape, but as power. This conversation is about what it means to lead with joy, especially when the world insists on something else. It's about resistance, intention, recalibration, and building something lasting from the most authentic parts of who you are. This is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
Good. How are you, Lance?
Good. I'm so happy to be chatting with you again. It's been 2 whole years, but it feels like it's been a long time because so much has happened since then, since we last chatted.
Yeah, wow. 2 years feels like 45.
I know, honestly. How are you today? How is everything? How are you doing lately?
I feel, it's like an interesting era. Like, personally, I have a lot of things that I'm so excited for and I'm doing that I'm really passionate about, and a lot that's keeping me going and really inspired and kind of locked in. And then I think zooming out, like, culturally, community, like, mm-hmm. politically, so much that I'm really concerned about, not loving, observing, with a lot of angst and just a lot of anxiety. I think so many queer people are looking at what's happening across the world and are incredibly concerned. So it's a weird dynamic, but trying to do the best I can in both realms.
Yeah, yeah. How do you kind of reconcile those kind of conflicting emotions? Like, is that your strategy, like zoom in, zoom out, like perspective and big perspective, focus on like small things? Like, what's your strategy around that?
I don't know. It's really kind of just doing the best I can. I don't think it's like necessarily like a zoom in and a zoom out. I think about sometimes the pressure of feeling responsible to fix entire systems and then remembering that like I'm one person, I'm not a system. And so that kind of makes me, that kind of helps to reconcile, because I'm like, I'm doing the best that I can and I can try to educate or empower about what I know and what I see, but it's ultimately like not my responsibility to like save the world.
Yes. I mean, that is a, that's a big burden to have on your shoulders if that's the perspective that anyone takes, right?
I think so many people have that perspective. I think so many people see what's going on and they feel so completely hopeless and responsible and like they're not doing enough. And I think that also makes people lash out and it makes people really judgmental. And I think that one thing I've learned a lot about this year is that if you're joyful and if you're experiencing joy and you're experiencing some amount of happiness, you're much more likely to be engaged and wanting to be a part of the solution on some of those problems versus if you're being constantly shamed and shunned and excluded, you're not going to be as likely to want to be involved in the solutions or the problems. So I think that is something that's important with like really like, I just try to remember that when I'm making content and like moving through the world that like, if you're shaming someone, they're going to be less likely to do what you want them to do. And that's something I've struggled with a lot over the years because it's so easy to be snarky. And I struggle with that too. So I'm not saying that I'm never not snarky, mm-hmm. but I'm trying to like reel that in and like lead with more compassion, even though it's really hard.
Yeah. It's not supposed to be an easy thing sometimes, right?
Yeah. What do you cut someone out in my comments on Instagram in like 20 minutes after I was just talking about like trying to be more peaceful. But yeah, I mean, we mess up sometimes. But that is like my overall goal.
Yeah. I mean, life is all about duality and nuance and lots of shades of gray. We don't exist in a binary world. So, you know, there's space for all considerations and for us to be able to feel all the feels and be able to give ourselves the grace to be able to navigate that and also not get it right all the time too, right?
Exactly.
It's the human experience. What are you doing these days to kind of check in with yourself and kind of just evaluate like where you're at on any kind of given day?
I'm a huge bath person. That really is like when I get done with my little like morning routine before I go to work, if I have a bath, which like when I'm at home, I do have a bath. I just, even if it's only like 5 minutes, like just drawing myself a quick bath and like not being on my phone and taking some deep breaths, it really does like center me and make me feel so much better for the day. So that's one thing that I'm doing. Another thing that I'm trying to do is not be on my phone when I first open my eyes, like try to like wake up, make my coffee and either be writing or like be going to do my little Pilates steez or something so that I just find that if I do just reach for the phone and start to read the news or look on social,
yeah,
my brain gets hijacked so fast. And the next thing I know, it's like 5:30 in the morning and I'm already in a really shitty mood and I'm like overwhelmed and I'm pissed off. And I'm like, why do I feel like this? And then it's like, oh, I looked at my phone. And it's not even 5:45 in the morning yet.
What time are you getting up at?
I'm like a freakishly early riser. Like my circadian rhythm is like really weird. Like the only way I can stay up past 10 o'clock is if I'm doing stand-up comedy and I've had like so much caffeine. but even then, like even if I'm up till 1 in the morning, I wake up at like 6:30. If I go to sleep at my normal time, which is like between like 9 and 10, then I wake up at like 5:15. Just like, that's just like my natural, like, I don't know. I don't even try to fight it. Cause starting around like 9 o'clock, I'm like, like, I just have a hard time staying awake.
That's goals for me. Honestly, if I could live that life, I would be so much happier. I feel like
I'm just not a night owl unless I'm on so much coffee and it's Friday or Saturday night and I'm performing stand-up.
Yeah. Yeah. So the last time we chatted was back in 2022. As we talked about, you know, a lot has happened since then. The world looks very different. There's been an entire election since then. If we think of this as like almost like a part two from our first conversation, what chapter are we in now? Like, what has changed for you? What's the title of your chapter that you're in right now?
I don't know. Renaissance, maybe? I think, yeah, I mean, it was really surreal. I mean, JBN Hair went from at that time, I think we were like the fastest growing hair care company in the United States. And then like 1 year later, like a year and a half later, our parent company was bankrupt and we didn't know if we were going to have a future. Like navigating a bankruptcy from a parent company is something that like, I really wouldn't wish on anyone. Like it was so stressful, so overwhelming. I did so much work that I didn't get paid for, like, and then had to like reach further into my pockets to like get a bankruptcy lawyer to like navigate that whole case, to like even get the contracts and everything so that like I could move the company to a new place. Like, none of that was free. Like, none of that was easy. I could have just like washed my hands and been like, that was a really painful lesson and just quit. But I believe in our formulas. I believe in our team. I believe in our mission. And our mission is really to like, it's about empowering people to express themselves through their hair and to know that they were worthy of being celebrated and loved no matter what they looked like anyway. Like, I don't want to prey on people's insecurities. I want to empower them with knowledge and expression and fun and joy through their hair. And I was like, I'm not ready to fold the tent on that. Like, I have a mission. I have a vision. Like, I want to do that. But that was really touch and go. That happened like the end of 2023. Then we found our new home, like, you know, a month or two after that. Transition was in January of 2024. And so that's been a really intense process. I'm really proud of our team for being able to navigate that process. I'm also really proud of our formulas for not changing and for us to be able to stay true to our mission of like not utilizing virgin plastic, staying true to our glass and aluminum, staying true to our formulation standards. None of that's been easy, but I'm so proud of ourselves for sticking through it. But yeah, I mean, I would have never known. I would have been so shocked if someone would have told me in 2022 that that's what was going to happen in 2023 and so on. And just like the pressure and the sadness and the loss. I mean, there was like layoffs. Like, obviously, I wasn't the only one that was impacted. Like, our team went through so much. And so that was just like really, that was really hard. And then I think now it's been like looking back on 2024, it's been about like, thanks, babe. It's been about like asking for help. I doubled down on therapy. Really it was like therapy and asking for help. And my friends and my family like showed up so much for me. And really what was, I think, one of the hardest years of my life, I remember on New Year's Eve of 2024 being like, yes, 2023 is over. Like, we had a really unexpected, like, tragic, devastating death in my family that I never talk about. I'm not really trying to talk about it now. Mm-hmm. But that happened in like early 2023. Then it was bankruptcy. Then Bobby left the show. Then it was bad faith, shitty expose, like trying to like, frankly, like bury me in my career, which was really overwhelming and terrifying. And like also something I really wouldn't wish on anybody.
Yeah.
And then that was also in the midst of a bankruptcy. And then like 3 weeks after that came out, I went back to set and continued to shoot in Las Vegas. And one thing I would just say is this. I never said this, but let's get juicy with it. Let's just back shepherd this. One way you can tell if a cancellation is like true or not is if their agency, if their publicist drops them or not. Mm. Like, my podcast got renewed twice. Sephora didn't go anywhere. Every single person that I ever worked with stayed working with me that represented me. Like, and I think the thing for me that was just so disappointing about that is that like our production company at Netflix, there are ways that we have to address on set issues if you have them. And so for people to come out of the woodwork that I hadn't seen or heard of for like 5-6 years to try to work with a reporter to it just was very like the whole thing was really yucky, and it gave me so much more perspective on cancel culture and on how media works in lockstep with like you love to build somebody up and then you love to tear them down. And so I just never saw myself going through that. But I was always afraid of something like that because that was such a fast meteoric rise. And I was always like, oh, like, is there going to be some shoe that's going to drop? And then it did. Like 17 times. And I joke in my stand-up set that 2024, like I went from being like America's sweetheart to being like America's bukkake bottom. Like every time I turned around, like someone was like unconsensually trying to come on my fucking chest, which was not very fun. And I hadn't even gotten to being featured on a Donald Trump campaign ad to the tune of $220 million that I got zero pennies of.
Right.
Because even like meeting the vice president in 2024 was like a huge risk for me career-wise. And there was so much going on at the time, but I was like, I have an opportunity to meet with the vice president of the United States. I want to advocate for HIV access or for HIV healthcare, HIV medical access, which I did. And I don't regret it. But to have this moment, like, you know, turned and utilized where it's like Kamala's for they, them. And it just like, it just really was. Every time I turned around in 2024, it was an insecure, attacking, like icky time to be me. And through that, grew the podcast, grew the brand, figured That's out great. How to like put one foot in front of the other. And I could not have done that without like our community and the people who just supported us through that. And I'm so grateful for it. And so I feel like maybe 2024 was like my reputation era, and now I'm like in my renaissance era.
We love that.
Yeah. I actually just found out a couple days ago, let's break the news here, that Sony picked up Getting Better for our third season there, which is really exciting.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so I'm just excited that I get my book just made the New York Times bestseller list, my like fictional debut.
Yes, yes, yes.
I've been working on since 2022, literally since we talked. It took me 2 whole years for me and Julie Murphy to write that book. So now it feels, you know, it feels good. But I also like look back and I'm like, holy shit. And then I also just learned about astrology on Getting Better. And I learned that like that 2012, which was a horrific year for me as well. And then it was pretty good up until 2024. And then that was really bad. Turns out that's on a 12-year cycle because like my house of Jupiter was like doing something or another. So 2036, you will not find me. I will be I'll be in a cabin on a lake in like in a padded room with like a cancer screener, like a heart machine. I'm gonna get like my mom there. I'm gonna get all my friends and family there. Like we are like doing like a an Armageddon, like final destination, like preventative situation for 2030.
Right.
Then I'll reemerge in 2037.
You've got all the crystal ball. You can predict it. And now you're prepared.
It's a 12 years thing for me, honey. I got a, those 12 year cycles are a mess.
Well, at least you're at the front of the next 12 year block. So exactly. You've got a little bit of time.
It should be like pretty good moving yeah. forward.
Are you of the mind that like everything happens for a reason? Like, is that something that you ascribe to or otherwise?
I think something like that. I think one thing that Alok always tells me is like, you know, how can you take this from like, why is this happening to me to like, why is this happening for me? So I do think that there is like a lesson in everything that happens, and you can, and that's definitely something that I've tried to do with like everything that's happened. Like, what was my responsibility? What was my culpability? What do I owe an apology for? To whom do I owe an apology for? How can I own what my part was in this? Mm-hmm. And then what do I not own? Like, what was not my part in this? And so that's, you know, a really important thing to do. And I think that ultimately it's like your relationship with yourself is like the most important thing. Like how you are to yourself when you navigate when things are really good or really bad or just like normal, that's going to be what kind of like, because that's like your last line of defense is like how you treat yourself, because you can't control other people, but you can control how you react in a situation. And I think that's a lot to do with like, how do you talk to yourself?
And what kind of inputs and outputs are you focusing on? And how much energy are you giving to a given scenario or situation, good or bad, I guess?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned joy earlier, and that's kind of really what I want to also focus on, because there's so much going on out there. And it's always, you know, so important to remind ourselves that there are good things that happen on a daily basis too. Joy has always been a part of your ethos from, you know, your journey from the start. There's a radiance, but I'm curious, has your relationship with joy changed in any way in the way that you perceive it, analyze it, take it in, consume it? Has it been recalibrated at all? And does it mean anything to you these days?
Joy means so much to me. And I think it has kind of been recalibrated. How I was just saying earlier about like, if you're more joyful or experiencing more happiness, you're more likely to want to get involved. That I learned that from Gretchen Rubin on Getting Better earlier this year. And one thing that like I had found was like, as my career was growing, I felt like more guilt and more shame for like sharing my wins or sharing my joy, because as I became more aware of other people's suffering, like both individually and systemically all across the world, because when your platform grows, you just get exposed to like so many more people and so many more voices, and you get so much more input. And so I think I felt really guilty for experiencing joy, or for having something exciting that I wanted to share about, whether that was like something that I learned or something that I purchased, anything, like sharing any sort of joy. And so I really started to like share less of that. And I felt like I really dimmed my light a little. And then, and especially like in 2024, like, you know, there were so many voices, there was so much criticism, there was so much, I mean, and that was just across the internet, that I just got really stifled and didn't want to share. And then I think when Gretchen was talking to me about like, no, like, that's my superpower, like, allowing people to feel joy and to, like, experience comedy, experience a story, experience, like, expressing themselves with their hair better or learning something. Like, how I show up in the world and what I do with my platform, like, that allows people to stay more engaged. So why would I do less of that? And so really what I noticed was, is that, like, I was curtailing myself to the critical voices as opposed to the people who were like, keep doing what you're doing, we love it. I was, like, shaping myself based off of these, like, hater-ass, negative, third-party-ass voters. They were just haters. And
yeah.
I just was like, I'm not going to, like, dim my shine based off of people that are committed to breaking me down, misunderstanding me, and just, frankly, being, like, haters. And so that's kind of, I was like, I get to experience joy. Like, that's what we're here for. And to try to leave the world better. And that's what I'm trying to do.
So with that in mind, what's the most joyful thing that you've got to do this year that no one has seen yet? Or that you haven't necessarily shared with the world too?
Oh my gosh.
It could be something small. I remember the last time we chatted, you were talking about gardening and like in your garden era. And so, like, just small joys too.
Well, like, even just like last night at our book event, we had our last night of our book event in Salt Lake City. And it was like such a special place to like end up. I got to like see Tan yesterday morning and then he went out of town. But like, there is so many amazing young people in Salt Lake City that had the most like intelligent questions, and they are so brave and strong, like being themselves in a community that like really isn't that there for them. And so it seemed like there was this like amazing person last night, this gender nonconforming therapist and social working in Salt Lake. And they were saying how like the kids that they work with, they just want those kids, they want to make sure that they feel safe. And seeing this person care so much and making such a huge impact on the young people in their community, I was saying to them, like, you look at me and you think that I'm like making this huge impact on the world. And like, maybe I am, and hopefully I'm doing good things. But like the people in my community that were giving me the service that you're doing right now, which was like, you know, my best friend's mom, like the people that like let me be myself in their house and, you know, weren't shunning me and like, you know, letting me explore like who I was, they literally allowed me to live, like to keep going, to keep finding my joy and keep finding my passion. And so I was like, girl, you're making like the biggest inroads. Like you're like literally shaping young people's lives day to day in an interpersonal way. It's not parasocial. And I think that parasocial has its importance. And like, there are meaningful connections that you can make online, but the connections that you make with the people in your life changes lives. Like you could be like helping to shape like the next JVN that moves, or even better, it could be Chapel, honey. It could be Benito Skinner, honey. You could be, you don't even know who you're shaping next.
Yes.
And so that was, it's like seeing people like that, even though we did have like terrible results in the election. And I think that the left has been like just so bitterly divided, which is just disheartening. But there is still so much good community work. There's so much good community activism. We are seeing people band together and find their community and find their strength. And so I think it's important to like notice that and celebrate that. And so thank you for asking that question, because there's like all of these beautiful queer interactions and queer community that happens that never get shared and doesn't get talked about, because frankly, good news doesn't spread as far as negative, because like scarcity is much clickier than abundance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I know it's very, it's a very interesting thing to kind of just sit still and think about too. And we interviewed someone earlier this year because we just went through our federal election recently. And
congratulations, you guys.
It was such a relief. was like a close call. But we, you know, I spoke to someone who is the leader of an organization called Apathy is Boring, and their whole mandate is to engage young voters and just try to get them to get out and be more engaged in their civil kind of duties and just be able to talk about democracy more. And it is, you know, I think sometimes, especially today, these days, like there's so many big challenges and things that just feel so overwhelming. And you as an individual, like you, the royal you as an individual, sometimes don't know how you can make an impact. And conversations like that where I had with Sam from Apathy is Boring, something as simple as just having a conversation with someone across the dinner table about like political literacy, or working if you're at like if you're volunteering for an organization, when things feel really big, one of the things that really stuck with me is that sometimes the biggest impact you can have on other people is, or the biggest impact you can have is on the people that are within arm's reach. And that I think was very, was a great reminder, because yeah, things can feel overwhelming and you don't know how to help and how to contribute sometimes. And sometimes that can be just by reaching out to the person next to you. And that can be the person that you, you know, that your interaction with them can shape someone incredible based off of a conversation.
Or, yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's, yeah, it's very, it's a very sobering kind of, reflective moment that I had anyways. On that note, you're very, very vocal about advocating for queer rights, obviously, and in a time when queer and especially trans rights are under attack more than ever, it seems like. How do you balance embracing queer joy with queer resistance? Because you have also said queer joy is resistance. How do you reconcile those two? Where's the balance between those two, and how do you kind of oscillate between these two things?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a really tough question. Like in my second book, Love That Story, I write about the HIV social safety net. And in that chapter, I interview this incredible HIV AIDS center that operates out of Mississippi. And they have patients who, there's no buses, there's no public transportation. We are talking about people who are living in like abject poverty, like no. And I think that's something for like, I think for Canadians, there's like one in particular who's really critical of me and my stances politically. And I just think that for anyone who's like progressive that lives in a big city, to live in rural America, when you're queer, if you're sexually active, you can die. And I just don't, like, people are still dying of AIDS in the United States, in mm-hmm. the rural South. I'm not kidding you. Dying of AIDS. Why are people dying of AIDS?
Yeah.
Because they have so little money. They cannot get to a doctor. There's no insurance. Now our Supreme Court is trying to disempower the Affordable Care Act to allow employers to not cover PrEP, like to not mm-hmm. cover birth control. What I've learned in my podcast from interviewing people, activists and people all over the world is like, and especially in the reproductive healthcare space, is that like when women and birthing people have access to reproductive healthcare, that is how they can achieve upward economic mobility and more stability, better health outcomes for them and their children, for their lives. We're getting rid of that in the United States. And so I just think that there was such this huge conversation around like, Kamala and the Middle East. And like, I never would condone like international warfare and mass killings of civilians. Like it's never okay. And at the same time, there are life and death choices that this administration can make in the United States. And now we have people dying more, less access to healthcare, less access to education. And so that's really troubling. And I think that's part of like what I get stuck on in 2024 is like, for leftists and third party folks who are like, you can't support this administration. Like, we literally sold our most vulnerable people, our queer people, disabled people, marginalized communities in the United States. Like, we sold them up the river because we thought Donald Trump would be kinder to Palestinians. Like, that's really what we sold people on TikTok. And I just think for anyone in a big city, like I come from a very small town, all the queers that I grew up with from a small town. And I know so many small town queers. And I just think that we have a false in places like Toronto, Montreal, like in New York City, Los Angeles, San Diego, for people that are politically active on social media in those places, if you have not lived in a city of below 30,000 people in the American South or Midwest, you really should temper. You just don't understand what these people are going up against. And I think that there's a false sense of progression that has not reached these people. Mm-hmm. The progression that we've reached in places like Toronto and New York City has not reached Arkansas, has not reached Mississippi. There are real queer people there that are really affected by our federal elections. And I just don't think that young people that were so with their full chest talking about like not voting for Kamala really understood the impacts that that was going to have on our most vulnerable people. And unfortunately,
it's happening.
Now we're figuring out how to help them because people are going through it in a way that they've never gone through it here.
Yeah. Yeah. I also grew up in a small town of 8,000 people, and going through high school, I think I only knew one person that was queer until I got to university. And it is a different world. Definitely when you compare like places of urban density where you have a diversity of perspectives across the entire political and economic
spectrum.
Even just
like access to healthcare. Like you can like walk or resources. Take a bus to the doctor. Like you don't have that in rural United States, and especially in the South. Like they don't have healthcare.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it's just, I really do want to abscond to Canada. Like to have universal healthcare and like a lack of guns. It just,
yeah.
Wow. That sounds really fun.
We've got a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things. There were a lot of interesting conversations that came out of our most recent federal election. And even though, you know, our left party won, it was a pretty surprising defeat in that the Conservative Party actually had a huge margin while Trudeau was still in office. All that being said, though, like even though they won, it, you know, the Conservatives actually still gained more seats out of that election. And it's only because the way that our political system works is that we have our progressive base is split up by multiple parties, and we kind of have one big Conservative Party. One of our progressive parties failed miserably, and that consolidated all the votes towards the progressive side. So there's just a lot going on here as well that is needs to be worked on and is part of the larger political discourse that we're seeing in the US, in Europe, et cetera, et cetera. And so hopefully it's a matter of the pendulum swinging back. But to your point, there needs to be more awareness to the communities and the lack of resources and also the regression of resources and policies that are happening right now, you know, especially with marginalized communities and the queer communities and trans community as well. So,
and at some point it would probably be like wise for me as a business owner to like shut the fuck up about it. You know, I'm sure the president of JV in here wishes that I would, but yeah, that's like, and as far as like reconciling, like how do you do it? Like that is really hard. Like, sometimes I'm like, do I just stop talking about that and just like focus on doing hair, making them laugh? Do I divorce myself from my political awareness and like the deep amount of work that I've spent hundreds of hours of my life researching and educating myself on the podcast? Do I just not, do I just like, it really is like so difficult.
Could you do it though? Like just being the person that you are, like, is that something that you think you would be able to just do as a person is to kind
no,
of just,
it's why I've no. never done it. Like, yeah. But I think that my life would be easier sometimes if I just like, you know, did what people thought that I would do and like just speak to hair, keep it light, keep it moving, keep it funny, and not do the rest of the stuff. And I think if I did, I probably would have more followers. I probably would be more successful but I'm just not willing to like sacrifice what I think and what I feel. Like, I do want to be true to who I am. And, but that's hard, especially when you put your foot in your mouth sometimes.
You mentioned this a little bit earlier in our chat, but, you know, you have always been outspoken and passionate about your value set and what you believe in. Do you feel continued pressure to be the quote unquote perfect advocate?
No, not as much, because I kind of know that I'm not. like, I know that I'm not the perfect advocate. Like, there, yeah, I know I'm not the perfect advocate. It's kind of like what I said at the beginning. I feel like I'm just really trying to do my best.
Mm-hmm. And what is a perfect advocate anyways?
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of kind of the various businesses that you have, so you have JVN Hair, your podcast, books, stand-up, a whole suite of, you know, what is the foundation of a media empire that you're building? How do you decide where to invest your creative energy? That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it is a lot of stuff. I mean, it's kind of hard to plan because, you know, the podcast is consistent and JVN Hair is consistent, but like Queer Eye is not consistent. You know, like I don't know where we're going to film, when we're going to film. So it's kind of hard to measure that. Mm. Same with stand-up comedy. Like whenever you're like planning a tour, like there's so much going into it. Like there's other people that are like all vying for that venue as well. So there's this like thing called like a challenge. So it's like, you might be like third in line or second in line, or you maybe got it first, or maybe you're like seventh. So you're always like just figuring out how your schedule is going to shake out. It's really difficult. I find that with my literary career, like I do my best writing like first thing in the morning, and it's really hard for me to like get up that early and like focus on my writing in my best way if I know I have a really packed day after that. Like I feel like when I write, I just need to only do that. And so I've been trying to negotiate with myself and be like, is that totally true? Like, is there no way you could do JVN Hair meetings or like other stuff when you are writing? Cause like, it really does kind of like grind it to a halt if I just, you know, can only do one thing at a time. So that's like something that I'm like kind of investigating internally right now and figuring out like how I can just like produce myself better. Cause there is so many things that I really am in a place in my career where like I only do stuff that I like and just in love with doing. Mm-hmm. But there's like five things, you know, that I really love. There is like, there's the doing hair, there's podcasting, there's writing, and there's comedy, and there's Queer Eye. And so figuring out like how to fit all that in is a challenge.
What do you think is the through line between all those things that has kept you like tapped and engaged and motivated? Passion. Yeah.
Passion, honey. I'm passionate for it. Mm-hmm. It feels like a full body yes, you know?
Yeah.
Like I want to do it. I want to do it my best. Like I want to be the best podcaster I can be. I want to be the best comedian I can be. I want to be the best founder I can be. It is just like this drive that I feel.
How did the goalposts change for you as you continue to kind of like surpass your goals, measure yourself in different ways? Like how did those goalposts change and how are you checking in with yourself to reevaluate those?
Eckhart Tolle talks a lot about like in The Power of Now, how when you can like notice your ego and like really try to get into your like centered self, he doesn't use that phraseology. I think he calls it like your observer, but like, it doesn't mean that like those goals are fake or like that the ego is fake and like the world that we live in is fake. It just means that there's something bigger or like something outside of that. So I think I'm really just trying to like, accomplishments are great. Like an Emmy is great. Like New York Times bestseller list is great. Like a new product launch is amazing and hopefully it goes well. But like trying to really understand and process that my worth and my value is not dependent upon my accomplishments. And that if everything went away tomorrow, as long as I could afford like an apartment big enough for my animals, like, you know, to like, that's really all. Like I would be happy doing hair in a salon, like with my husband and my animals, like have, like if I lost everything tomorrow, I would find a way to like find my happiness.
Your joy.
And so I think that's kind of like how the goalpost has changed. Like I used to, like when Getting Curious got canceled on Netflix, like when it got greenlit, I remember thinking to myself and saying, I was like, can we do this after Queer Eye? Like, I don't know if I want to have a show competing against Queer Eye, like on Netflix at the same time. Like,
right.
The audience isn't ready for me to do my own thing yet. And it's just like so much to balance. And they were essentially like, we're not asking you like when you want to do it. Like, it's either like shit or get off the pot. Like, yeah, this is your opportunity if you want to do it, you know? And when you're an entertainer, and I've been like, obviously executive producing and creating my own show is like a huge dream. But when it got greenlit, it was like December of 2020. It was like right before the vaccine. So I remember thinking to myself, like, God, I hope I don't kill anybody's grandma of COVID because I wanted to learn about figure skating or like the history of hair. And I mean, there was like,
right,
you know, that was like back when we had like A, B, C zones, and like 3/4 of our budget got taken up on just like COVID testing. And you had to like, and like literally to have a guest on our show at the time, they had to like isolate for 10 days. So be like, hey, do you want to come sit in a hotel room for 10 days by yourself? And before you can even be in a room with me and get tested 97 times. So like, it really like, you know, most people don't want to do that. Plus the show was originally like pitched as like a travel version of my podcast, where then we ended up like getting like stuck in Manhattan. Did not go how we thought it was going to go. And I remember like in the process of shooting that being like, as long as we get a season 2, I'll be okay. I just don't want to be a season 1 flop. Like I just, as long as I get a second season of this, like it will be okay. And when it got canceled, like the last call that I had with the show executive that canceled the show, I will never forget, like closing the laptop and the like guttural wail that I've never cried like that. Like I have never, I did after, but that was the first, when the family member passed away. But that was like, I mean, truly the most, I felt like I let down every single fan of mine, every single young queer person that wanted to like, I just felt like I totally let everybody down, like my team down, the crew down. It just felt like this huge flop. And I was like, oh my God, my career's over. Like, and it was like my biggest fear. And then, you know, a month goes by, 2 months goes by, 3 goes a month, and you're like, oh, I went through my worst fear. I went through my worst nightmare. None of that really was true. Like my career is not over. And actually like my instinct was correct. I shouldn't have done getting curious then. I wasn't ready. And I'm sure if I would have just said like, no, the opportunity would have come back around again. So right. If I really want to be upset with someone, if I need to find a place to like, I was like, oh, that was like me not listening to my instinct. That's why that didn't go right. And also my instinct knows that like none of these career things are real. Like, it's the whole Eckhart Tolle ego thing. So I feel like that's like how my goalpost moved, is like there was a while there where I really was like believing that my worth and my career was like tied to the results. And then after having like flopped so many times, I was like, oh, I'm still here. I'm still able to do like, so I think that's probably what I've learned.
Yeah. You made it to the other side and you're still doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. With all that in mind, like with the businesses that you run, those kinds of experiences as well, and the things that you continue to kind of navigate, what have you learned about like, and also actually like kind of the guests that you have on the show too, what have you learned about power and, you know, who has it, how to wield it, when to walk away from it? Have you had any kind of fresh perspectives on that?
Lately, I feel like on the pod, it's been a lot about, it's really about like, I changed the name from Getting Curious to Getting Better, because it's about just like, how do I understand things better? How do I understand myself better? I'm trying to like focus my neurodivergence a little bit more in the podcast. So it's not like the history of chimpanzees to like the history of scissors to like, why do I get so like obsessed with niche topics? Like, I just like want to focus it a little more. So it is a little bit more about like, you know, mental health, society, culture, like productivity, work-life balance, like all things in that realm is like a little bit more focused. So lately, like one episode that like really blew my mind was on neuroscience with Dr. Wendy Suzuki, just teaching me so many things about our brain and how it works that like, and for her, it was a lot about just how important movement is, not to like our aestheticness, but like to literally our brains. Like it staves off Alzheimer's, it staves off dementia. Hmm. It's so much better for our just for our cognition and like the, how our brain functions, like just to move your body in some way, like move your body.
Get those 10,000 steps in.
Yes. Like James Kimmel we had on, he's a lawyer who turned into a Yale research. He runs like a research lab with neuroscientists, but he was a lawyer and he kind of coined and realized this idea of like revenge addiction. And I was like, revenge addiction, what's that about? And so really like the power of forgiveness. And like, it's not really about forgiving the person for them. It's about for you, so that you can like release yourself from this narrative and this thing that happened to you in your past and like really open up your life to like receive the fullness of the authenticity of like what you could be without this like thing that you went through. And so like, that was a really, really incredibly eye-opening for me. We had Dan Harris from the 10% Happier podcast, and he blew my mind with like his ability to like transmute pain into purpose. So that's been a lot about like kind of what we're talking about. It's like taking like some of it is like taking the bad stuff that you've been through, turning it for good. For Pride Month, we have like some really fun episodes coming. There's actually one that you would really like with Dr. Judith Joseph that's all about happiness and joy, and like the science of happiness and joy. She's incredible. I think she's like our second or third episode for Pride Month. So yeah, a lot of fun stuff there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Just as we kind of wind down here, moving forward, what are you kind of fighting to protect in this like next season of your life, this next chapter of your life? What's important to you?
Mental health, health, my family, my pets. And I think I'm kind of probably approaching this season of like more focus, like really figuring out what in my life I want to focus on and like what the next kind of chapter looks like. But I don't exactly know yet.
That's kind of the beauty of it too.
Exactly.
And whether it's like through your show or your podcast, or any of your other endeavors, ultimately, what do you want people to feel after spending time in your universe, in the JVN multiverse across your different kind of different ventures?
Awareness, joy, and I want them to feel more aware, more joyful, and more full. I think so much of everything that I do that really does unify all of everything that I do, even though it's so different, is that your joy and your grief can live next to each other. The fullness of your emotions can all be there and they don't invalidate each other. Mm-hmm. We get to be a multitude, and that can be educated, joyful, aware, angry, calm. It can be everything. We all get to paint with like all the beautiful colors of our palettes, and I want that to be welcome and I want that to be celebrated.
I love that. Thank you so much for your time, and like so generous with your time, your energy. And I just love listening
I
to you talk
too much.
No. And I love listening to your show.
I was feeling open.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the chat again, and hope to see you back in Toronto sometime soon.
I'd love that.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jonathan. That's a wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.